Episode 36.
The print magazine always showed up at the boss's desk, and then it went to his office, and we never got to see it in the back. If we serve 120,000 shops across the country, then there's probably 300,000 to 400,000 technicians that I'm trying to reach.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results On Point, focusing on a single topic with a guest who goes on point with the subject matter.
A warm welcome to Pete Meyer, the Director of Training for MotorAge, ABRN, Aftermarket Business World, and Dealer News. You've probably read of Pete or have seen his magazines. Pete, are you ready to go on point?
Absolutely.
Welcome, Aftermarketer. I'm so glad you stopped by. Carm Capriotto here. Today's On Point industry interview is with Pete Meyer, Director of Training with Advanced R Publications. But first, I want to get to know you better, and there's two ways to do that. First is to become an insider and subscribe to the episode newsletter. Next, take my very, very short survey. Now, both the insider subscriber button and the survey button is on the homepage. Just go to remarkableresults.biz website. Maybe you're there right now. And help me on these two fronts. Become an insider and be in the know, and let me know about you because I'm building a profile of my listener base. Now, Pete Meyer, the Director of Training for the ABM Advanced R Automotive Group of Publications, goes on point right here in episode 36. I'm sure you've read Pete in either MotorAge, ABRN, Aftermarket Business World, or even Dealer News. His primary goal is to bring working technicians the information they need to succeed. Pete is an ASE certified master technician and sponsoring member of IATN. He has over 35 years practical experience as a technician and educator. I met up with Pete at NACE Cars 2015 in Detroit in July and heard him on a panel discussing growing new talent. We brought the theme of that discussion to the podcast, but covered a lot more ground to include technology, Toyota's move to fuel cell vehicles, and even vehicle safety through technology. And Pete got into how we all must make a difference for our industry and not just talk about improving or fixing the issues that plague us. Sometimes Pete says we can be handicapped by our own actions. He was very forthcoming, and I love the part when he talked about trade schools and in one instance where an instructor impressed upon his students that they must learn to talk car. What a concept. This is an eye-opener and oh so true. Be sure you don't miss that. Remember, listen to learn just one thing. Here we go. Well, as I was saying, Pete, you're a busy guy with all the magazines that you're involved with, and you have 1,400 Twitter following. You're a tech-turned editor. Well, what prompted the leap to media?
Kind of interesting. I actually had a problem with a Lexus EVAP system while I was still a technician.
Okay.
And I don't like getting beat. So I started doing a lot of research on it to figure out what it was I didn't know. And I put all the notes together and wrote them all up with the idea of keeping it in my toolbox for later use.
Okay.
And the wife says, you know, all that work you did, why don't you send it in one of those magazines you're looking at all the time and see what happens? And I actually sent it into a few of them. It was published in what is now a competitive publication, but the folks at MotorAge liked what I did and invited me to do some other work for them. And luckily, I had the opportunity to join them full time.
And the rest is history.
Pretty much.
As they say. How much do you travel?
I probably average at least one road trip a month, if not more. I try to get out as much as I can to events that are promoting professionalism and industry training, support some of the smaller ones to help them to beef up attendance if possible, and get them publicity, if you will, able to use the voice that I have now to help them get the word out about what they're doing.
Are you like a media star? I mean, when you're out in the field, do people want to come and check you out?
Oh goodness. We had our inaugural Auto Mechanica Chicago event this past April. And a lot of the technicians that showed up for training there had never had the opportunity to go to any type of formal event before this one. Over 2,000 technicians and shop owners attended our training event there. And I made a point of being at the bottom of the stairs to welcome them and help them find their classrooms that they were going to. And,
mm-hmm.
and kind of humbled by the number of requests that I got for pictures or to shake your hand or something. It really took me aback. You know, again, I'm I'm just a tech. You know, that's the way I still look at myself.
You're just a humble guy, and you're taking selfies.
Oh, these are just average. I mean, these are guys who are working in the shops in the area that came about and had, you know, they saw some. They've seen our stuff on YouTube. They've seen our stuff in print. You know, and certainly, I guess that hasn't helped the notoriety, if you want to call it that. But
I am honored to have you here with me doing the Remarkable Results On Point interview. How much time do you spend today under the hood?
Not as much as I'd like to be honest. I spend a lot of time more on the desk than I do under the hood now. I try to stay current as much as possible. I have a local shop that I can play in from time to time. And certainly, you know, I have the normal friends and family requests for assistance. So I try to keep my hands somewhat dirty and calloused. I want to maintain that contact with our audience. I want to know.
In talking to other techs that turn trainer, they do the same thing. They've got their favorite haunts, and when they even travel, there's a favorite shop they love to go into and hang out in. Your primary goal, I've read, is to bring working technicians the information they need to succeed. So in your words, Pete, what's the best delivery method you have to get information out?
Oh, goodness. I don't think there is any one best. I think it was the fact that we've absorbed and welcomed so many. We weren't one of the first trade publications to branch out into social media, Facebook, Google Plus, Twitter, the whole nine yards. We're the only one that I know of that hosts a YouTube channel, you know, for its audience, which now has over 12,000 subscribers.
Well, that's great.
As a technician, the print magazine always showed up at the boss's desk. Excuse me. And then it went to his office and we never got to see it in the back.
Right.
So if we serve 120,000 shops across the country, then there's probably 300,000 to 400,000 technicians that I'm trying to reach. And I want to find a way to reach them on platforms that are more relevant to them, if you want to say that.
Okay, I mean, sure.
You know, a lot of our guys are, they have the smartphones, they have the tablets, they have the computers, you know, so they're very social media savvy.
So if you had to pick one or two that's really giving you the most impact, what would they be?
I'd say our YouTube has probably been the single biggest impact only because of its ties to Google and Google's,
you know, the search engine. And Pete, that brings up this incredible quote, and I need to read it in so you can remember it. You said, as the technical editor for this magazine, I know the importance of verifying my sources before reporting to you. The same is true when you are seeking answers online to the challenges that face you on a daily basis. You remember this?
Oh, absolutely.
You have to be able to verify the validity of the resource you're relying on, or else you'll be just shotgunning parts in the hope that the problem will go away. You went on to say, many so-called repair recommendations I've seen posted on social networks, Facebook, Google+, are actually scary and go against every professional standard for repair we have. And you finished by saying this, these fixes could actually place you or your customer in danger and or open you to criminal or civil liability. That's a powerful statement. So where should the techs go for information?
Well, I think it's like you were always taught when you were younger, know your source. Don't rely on some so-called internet guru who probably never even had a wrench in his hand, but is just spitting back forth stuff that he's found on Google without any kind of verification. Use a source that you know. For example, we have a lot of resources at MotorAge and their related sites. There are several other wonderful resources available that professional technicians are familiar with. Don't rely on the first few hits that you find when you just do a generic Google search.
As a sponsoring member of IATN, and you said this is the best friend a technician could have, what are the several features that make IATN a great source?
Well, I think it started off as a group of technicians who were sharing ideas, sharing knowledge, kind of the same way that we used to before the internet with the guys who worked in our shop or, you know, shops in our neighborhood. You know, we would share fixes or see other opinions from these guys. It just took it to a grand scale with the course of the internet coming online. And like anything else, there are those on there that tend to just look for that silver bullet, as we say. But there are many more, in fact, many of them contribute to our magazine now, that are experienced and dedicated to giving back to the industry and helping techs along the way if they're sincere about learning.
This is the biggest resource, though, for technicians. Is this true?
I'd say it's one of the biggest, yes. there are a number of them now. The internet has opened up a lot of different avenues that techs can take into play. In fact, IETN's cousin, Identifix, is one example. I know that the folks at Mitchell 1 have built a very large database now that's incorporated in their service information. All data's community is online now. There's a lot of growth in all these areas, and we're not even beginning to talk about the aftermarket companies who make the parts. I mean, take example, Federal Mogul's Garage Guru program. They're spending a lot of money on developing a variety of training and information resources for their customers.
You know, that's an exciting thought about what Federal Mogul has done, and I've actually put a request out to get someone from Garage Guru to come on to an On Point, and hopefully one day we'll have someone. You and I hooked up at NACE Cars in July 2015. I heard you speak on a panel about future technicians, and that prompted me to have you on the show. So thanks for coming on. You said some really great things, and among them, you mentioned that there's a challenge in getting established techs to go to training, and you said, guys, there's an apathy factor out there. Now we have a springboard to talk about it. What's going on?
I think we're actually starting to see some turn in that, and I like to think that we've had a small part in that, again, by making it training resources available. As a technician, raising a family, I don't know, many of your audience may not realize, but according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the median income for technicians is in the mid-30s. Of course, that's going to vary with the part of the country that you're standing in, of course, but it's not one of the highest paid professions out there. So being able to afford professional training is a challenge for many. And again, that's one of the things that when I first joined MotorAge, I went to my bosses, my new bosses, and said, we need to do something about that hole. And that's what prompted the birth of the YouTube channel and our social media and our webinars that we do four times a year, all offered at no cost to those who want to participate. Not trying to undermine any of the companies that do professional training. Believe me, I truly appreciate the amount of effort and time and resources that are spent to create these programs, and they're worth every penny that these companies ask for them. But there's a large audience out there that just simply cannot afford to take advantage of that training, and that's a need that we need to address.
So my question is, and I got a million things going through my mind, is the shop owner getting in the way of making this happen, or is the tech just not being proactive himself?
You know, I think it's kind of a culture that we've allowed to develop in every shop that I've ever been in as an employee. If you're making what you want to make and you're comfortable making what you want to make, there isn't any real motivation to go further than that. It's too easy to say, well, I can't deal with it, send it to the dealer. So that shop is losing a lot of business as a result. And with the technology changes that are going on in this industry, that's going to severely impact the shop's ability to add to their bottom line by sending more and more away. I think it's a combination of things. I hear a lot of techs saying that they can't get the time off, they're not paid for training, they don't get any consideration for training. And as I said in that panel discussion you're referring to, we're not setting up a culture in the shops that the pursuit of continuing education is something that you need to do. It's part of our business culture. If you want to stay with us, if you want to move forward with us, you have to grow.
So I've asked the question of many of our entrepreneurial interviews when I interview shops. I release that podcast on Tuesdays. Everyone seems to have a program or a commitment of so many hours of training for their techs. And I would hope that the listeners of the podcast are picking up on that and they're saying, you know, we need to make training part of our culture. And is that possibly the problem that exists out there, is that the culture of training just isn't high enough?
Well, I think that, I guess a lot of the guys that you're talking to, the guys that you see at the annual events across the country, no matter which ones they are, they tend to be the choir, and we're always preaching to that choir. You know, there's literally thousands of shops across the country that are still being run in a business sense like we did back in the 60s and 70s when I first started in this industry. And that needs to change with the times. We always used to say that the weak shops wouldn't last because, you know, they weren't doing the right job by their customers. They go out of business because you know what? They're still in business. You know, they still get what their fair share.
And why? And I'm not being negative here at all by any means. I'm just wondering how that longevity has been there. Is it because everybody needs breaks?
Well, I think that, again, you have to start with, there's so many elements involved with this, Carm. Yeah. It's all so intertwined. I often use a comparison to that old game of pickup sticks, you know, okay, where you spread the straws on the table and you have to pick one up without moving anything else. Mm-hmm. You can't do that when we're discussing our issues that face us as an industry, because they are so intertwined. And to go back to your question, consumers, for example, don't comprehend the amount of technology involved with their cars. They'll spend $40,000 or $50,000 on a new car, but they shrink when they're faced with a 1995 oil change. And there are many companies that are competing, especially, and I don't want to mention any names, but there are a lot of chains that corporately are using their pricing techniques to create business or acquire business. And that just undermines the independent who's doing the right thing, doing the right job, and hiring, you know, talented guys who can actually fix the cars. That's something else I mentioned in that panel discussion. Most of what we do, a lot of what we do, is a matter of changing a component when it wears out, whether that be a tire, a water pump, whatever else that might be. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of talented men and women in the industry that are very good at that. They can do it quickly, they can do it properly, they can do it efficiently, and have no problems doing that. But when it comes time to taking these electronic systems, these complex systems on the vehicles, and when something isn't working quite the way it was designed to, that takes a different kind of person to be able to home in on that problem correctly the first time and fix it correctly, you know, the first time. That takes talent, it takes intuitive thinking ability, and it takes a lot of experience and training.
Well, I didn't mean to open up a can of worms, but you answered that really, really well. Now, at the panel discussion, you spoke about the need for a new work model with a master tech supporting other techs. What is the adoption rate of this that you know of, and why is this so important?
Well, I think it's a model that dealers have used for a long time. It's one answer to that shop owner's dilemma of how he's going to pay good that A tech, that guy who can fix the car, diagnose the problem, and do it correctly, support his continuing education, support the tooling that's necessary to do all that kind of work. Instead of having everybody in the shop at that level, again, there are a lot of shops that are using that type of system where you have one guy, he's basically your in-house mobile diag guy, mm-hmm, and he's still around figuring out what's wrong and then leading the repair with technicians who are coming up. On just letting them take care of the actual physical repair of the vehicle.
Is there any challenge to a model like this? I mean, I guess if a shop would have a couple of high-end master techs, then he's got to have enough work for all of them.
And I think that's one of the challenges, again, with our industry and our shop owners face is being able to support that. Again, it's like I said at the panel discussion, as a technician, I never left the shop because I didn't like the boss and I didn't like the environment or I didn't like the guys I worked with. It always came down to one thing. I could not afford to pay my bills.
Right.
And I was never, and I'm not living in a $100,000 home or $200,000 home. I mean, I live down south, so homes are relatively cheap compared to up north. But, and I don't have, luxury cars in the driveway. All I wanted to do throughout my working career was put a roof over my family's head, clothes on my kids' backs, be able to pay for their education, be able to pay for their medical care, the basic necessities.
Sure, sure.
As long as I was able to do that, I was a happy camper, and I stayed with you. But when the time came that I couldn't do that, I had no choice.
I remember you saying that the reasons that you left was about money, and I think you said it differently, but I get the point now. Is this master tech supporting, say, two or three techs? Is this going to be a real critical working model of the future?
I think each shop owner has to figure out what's best for him and his market. I think that's certainly something that if they're not considering it as an option, they should look at. That old saying that two heads are better than one can prove true, when you have two guys working together to get those billable hours out. If you have a lot of that type of repair work, that diagnostic, that troubleshooting repair work, or you haven't gotten involved with it because you didn't think you had the manpower, I think going to your local vocational program and mentoring some young guys and have that master tech take care of the diag and let them do the heavy lifting, so to speak, under his supervision, could actually have more billable hours.
Great. And this is almost the perfect segue. Thank you for this. And I can't remember if you said this or someone else on the panel. We were talking about, or you guys were talking about, trade struggling for good people, welding, construction, electrical, plumbing. And then there was a mention about being involved in the local advisory schools or campuses, high schools, getting out and talking to people. And then there was this great statement, and I'm not sure who said it. Kids are taught to speak car. And I don't know if that was Tony Mollo said that or you.
That was me.
Okay. Tell me about that.
Well, I tell you, I was actually impressed with a local high school program here. Young man started it up. He was actually more known for his motorcycle building skills than his car skills, but he was also an accomplished automotive mechanic as well. And he took on this auto program at the local high school. He started off with two empty classrooms. They had no shop, no equipment. His kids actually got the only hands-on experience was actually detailing teachers' cars. You know, that was their ability to get their hands on it.
Okay.
But one of his favorite things that he shared with me was that he was able to teach these kids how to speak car. And if they wanted to get involved in the car business, you had to speak car if you were going to be a technician.
I love it.
Shop owner, if you were going to be a parts counterman, if you were going to be a salesperson, if you were going to be the receptionist at a dealership, it helps if you can speak car. And that's what he taught. And he would start a fire in these kids to the point where now the county built him like a six-bay shop, fully equipped, and his classes, the request to get into his classes got a backlog. And the local area dealerships a few miles up from that school are picking up these kids out of high school as fast as they can graduate them.
So the message here is get out and talk to the counselors. Did you ever have the parent goes to school and get in there and talk about my wonderful automotive service shop and the technology required, and don't be afraid of computers because there's jobs there. It's like we are almost waiting for the vocational schools to do it for us and then sit back and wait for the techs to show up, and they're not there. I mean, they're there, but there's not enough of them.
Well, again, it's something that has to be handled on a local level. That's one of the reasons I like to avoid that term industry. You know, we are all individually the industry.
Right, right.
But to go back to what you were saying, you know, I did some research on an article or a speech I gave a year or so ago. The public vocational programs are producing enough graduates from their automotive programs to meet our industry's growth and attrition needs.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not all staying in the pipeline. Some are attracted away by other industries. I shared that comment that Mike Rowe had made some time ago about 300,000 skilled trades openings in this country that go unfilled because we don't have the people to put there.
Right.
We lose some to how they're being treated once they are in the shop. Again, there's that old school mentality that you're going to start in this business the same way I did, by sweeping the floors and cleaning bathrooms. That mentality, I think, needs to change. And there are a lot of shops out there that are doing exactly that. You know, they're mentoring these kids. To me, if I was a shop owner looking for people, the local vocational program, that's my farm team. That's my minor league team. I'm going to be supporting that team and keeping an eye on the kids that are in there as they're developing. And I'm going to do my best to identify and hire the brightest and best among them.
That's a great takeaway here. Go out and start building your farm team. I love it. Hey, how do people get a hold of you?
Facebook, social media, I'm not hard to find. Like you said, Twitter, Google+. You can always reach me through the magazine. You're more than welcome to share the email address if you want to.
Okay, great. Hey, so what's the big key concentration in auto repair in the next 5 years? If I asked you to come and give a speech, you know, what's it going to look like in 5 years based on your area of concentration?
Wow. I'd say first and foremost, everything on the car is being made electronic. The more they can make electronic, the happier they're going to be. With Toyota now announcing their move into the fuel cell arena, I mean, that's big.
Huge.
I mean, they're a big company. If they see a future in it, I got to believe there is one. And autonomous driving, something that we've been reporting on now since its inception, starting with the big Ann Arbor experiment a few years ago that NHTSA held and mm-hmm. is still holding. In fact, I tell my son, when my oldest granddaughter's ready to drive, odds are she won't have to.
You know, just tell the car. That's a great statement. How old is your granddaughter?
She just turned 11.
Oh, and you think it's that fast?
I know that NHTSA is already in the process of investigating proposed rulemaking, which means that whatever they put in black and white and make official, the OEMs have got to meet. Oh. So I'd say at the very least, we're going to be looking at connectivity between the cars, similar to what you're using in Ann Arbor, for safety purposes. I mean, imagine, Carm, being able to eliminate 80% of all traffic accidents and in a system that is upgradable to older vehicles.
Hey, at NACE, did you have a chance to go to that technology forum where the guys from GM got up and started to talk about that future stuff?
Yeah,
I did. And I also went to an iCar seminar on the same kind of stuff, and it was they were trying to teach them to be the technicians to be aware of it. GM was talking, as they always do, about all the Star Wars stuff that they have coming out. What were you the most impressed with that you saw?
Well, I think a lot of it was overlooked was the short presentation that the guy from NHTSA made.
Yeah.
Again, talking about the fact that here's, you have a little box that's similar to a Wi-Fi device in your car that's constantly inquiring to other traffic's speed, direction, and location, as well as letting them know what yours is. And I wrote about this a few years ago. And the example that I gave is, imagine if you're coming to a stoplight and your light turns red, you stop, you wait for your turn, and then the light turns green. And most of us will say, okay, green light, and off we go. Well, maybe there's a tractor trailer coming in the other direction that can't stop. Even though his light's red, it's nothing he can do about it. He's got, what, 100,000 pounds barreling down on you.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it's going to involve an accident that is going to cause problems. With this system, your car is already going to know that tractor trailer is coming. It won't let you go. The tractor trailer is going to know that it's getting ready to blow this light, or would have prevented it from going through the red light in the first place, because it can also be tied to the infrastructure. It's going to save a lot of people lives, property damage. Again, I think they estimate something like 80% of the accidents are caused by momentary lapses of judgment, negligence, if you want to call it that. You're already seeing this somewhat with the rear-end collision avoidance. You've seen the commercials. You know, you're too slow to step on the brake, but your car's already done that for you. This is just the tip of the iceberg.
Is this going to be, I mean, I know it's going to be legislated, am I right?
Sure, yeah, regulated by the NHTSA.
So do you find consumer acceptance for all of this stuff?
I don't think consumers fully appreciate half of what they already have on their cars, to be honest with you.
Uh-huh.
I don't understand the full technology that's at their fingertips. I think it's going to be a change. I think with anything like that, there's going to be resistance to change. I mean, I remember when electronics and the computers first came out, the old timers going like, oh, I'm never going to own a car like that. You know, I don't want all that electronic computerized stuff on my car. But hey, now look.
Same with disc brakes, am I right?
Sure, absolutely.
Well, look, I can't tell you. I've learned a lot, and I believe our listeners will have. This could become one of their favoritest episodes. So I thank you so much, Pete. Pete Meyer from Motor Age. Pete is the Director of Training for Advanced Star Automotive Group. So thank you so much for being on.
My pleasure.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.